Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, now is the time to text in your questions. 710-710 is our text line. We'll get to your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Kind of sad, isn't it?
What?
Well, we're almost at the end of the mini camps, and everybody's going to start breaking up for vacation and all that stuff. I mean, tomorrow, I mean, I'm going to imagine that they are going to have a short practice. But then after that, it's, hey, wait till July 27th in training camp.
Well, John, why don't you bring your yearbook, and you can get everybody to sign it. Sounds like you're like graduating and, yeah, you know, going away,
Dave,
for summer.
Dave?
Yes,
you
yes,
know,
John.
You know there's a pandemic, right?
Yes, I do,
there's
John.
There's COVID-19,
yes,
and we're not allowed to get next to the players.
Okay.
Yeah,
now
come
we
on,
may-
Dave.
Well, bring your yearbook anyway. I'll sign it, John.
Oh, okay.
John, this is the time of year coaches dread the most, right? This is,
you know,
players have the free time. Nobody's monitoring them unless they happen to be guys, you know, rehabbing at the facility or what have you. But this is, I've heard so many coaches just talk about this is where the anxiety kicks in for them because they're just hoping not to wake up in the morning and see a headline that somebody on their roster did something at a nightclub or got pulled over for this or, you know, just kind of the typical stuff that seems to happen.
Even more the general managers, because they're the ones that usually get the first phone call. And it's like, oh, boy. It's like, you know, they go into a depression, I guess, when they get something like that, when they get that phone call, because you never know what's going to happen. But I'll tell you what's been interesting in the last couple years, the numbers have been much less. And I think what it comes down to is that the fines, the suspensions, the sanctions, all those different things have allowed the players to at least be a little bit smarter about it. Now, again, you're going to have your DUIs, unfortunately. You're going to have your drug arrests and things of that nature. Unfortunately, you're going to have some assaults and all that stuff. But the numbers over the last 2-3 years have been shrinking each year.
Well, and last year, maybe that was good news that people were pretty much locked down. So
yeah, yeah,
that helped a little bit. We were just talking about Dwayne Brown, John. First of all, just in general, how do you see that going? What I would say is Dwayne Brown comes from such a bad situation in Houston. Same thing with Jamal Adams. I feel like that instantly gives the Seahawks a little bit of leverage.
Yeah, it does. And I think what it comes down to is, and again, like I was talking about yesterday, I went over the Andrew Whitworth contracts, you know, because he's, a couple years older than Dwayne. And you know, he was at the $11.25 million mark back in 2007, and then it started going down each year. I mean, after, because he signed a three-year deal, then he went to about 10.25, and then down to 10. So I would imagine, you know, with Dwayne Brown making 10, if it can come out something like that, and obviously they can get a good cap number over putting a whole bunch of voids and things like that. I mean, you would anticipate if they're going to do something, it's going to be 2 years at the max, maybe just 1 year. But I think there's a way you can justify, you know, giving him, a little less than 10 or close to 10 million and keeping him at the left tackle position.
Yeah. And we were talking in the earlier segment, John, I don't know if either of us feels strongly that they have his replacement on this team right now. I mean, I like Jamarco Jones.
Yeah.
Cedric Abuehi. The one thing I'll say about Cedric Abuehi, he's very athletic for his size. He moves around like a much smaller man. But, yeah, I don't feel like they have that guy here. You need a couple years to develop one or go get another Dwayne Brown if that's at all possible.
Mm-hmm. And, again, just going through the list of what happened at the left and right tackle position in this past off season, I mean, there was so little movement. I mean, there's just about as many draft choices now going to be at the left tackle position as there are guys who moved in free agency. I mean, the biggest name was Eric Fisher, the two-time Pro Bowler who's coming off an Achilles injury. He got $8.3 million. Then you got Trenton Brown, the right tackle, going back to the New England Patriots. He gets a one-year deal at $9 million, but all the other numbers are so much less. And so, I think what you're looking at is that this year was a tough market for left tackles. We'll see what it's going to be next year. And obviously, without the first round pick, it's going to be a little bit tougher to get that tackle of the future for John Snyder. He can get it, but it's still going to be not easy.
So you think if they were to sign Dwayne Brown to an extension, mm-hmm, whether it's a year or 2 years, whatever it is, that it would be less than what he's making now?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if not very close to being it, because, again, it's like, you know, the age game plays against you when you're trying to negotiate. And, how many how many other teams are going to be looking at 36, 37-year-old left tackles next year?
Well, for a short term, I could see a lot of teams looking at, I mean, just based on his productivity, his durability, and, mm-hmm. and the level that he still plays, I could see a team saying, hey, we'll give you 12 for 1 year, you know, just to fill a gap for us for 1 year and do it at a high level.
Mm-hmm. But I think that, I mean, I think it's just going to be a level deal. I mean, I don't think he's going to get that much more. Now, again, you don't know, and we don't know for sure if the cap's going to go up to $208 million, which, of course, that would change the whole equation. I still question that, but, again, that's what the Players Association and the owners agreed upon, that they would put a cap of $208 million. He went to $208.5 million, but I just can't see this market and the revenue going up, you know, basically, what, $42 million? Because, again, it was supposed to be $166 million this year with the revenue that they had, and certainly there's going to be more, but to take it up to $208 million, I just wonder about that.
All right, we'll get three out of the way. Josh Gordon, Alden Smith, KJ Wright.
No,
know anything about anybody?
No. Nobody. KJ still doesn't have anything. Josh Gordon remains suspended. We don't know how long that's going to go. We don't even know if he's reapplied for reinstatement yet. I mean, we don't know that. And so he's out of it. And, you know, as far as Alden Smith, I mean, July 14th, that's that's when his case is going to be heard, and we'll see how it goes from there.
I just want to get all those out of the way because we get our texters, John. They want to know, and they don't know that we ask you this, you know, enough times that you get tired of it. But anyway, yeah, just updates on all of those guys. How about the Drew Brees contract? We know anyone
where that's at. Kyler Murray playing baseball.
Murray, of course, wants to play baseball. So.
John, what do you think of Woody Johnson spoke to the media as the owner of the Jets for the first time since May of 2017? I don't know if you saw this. I didn't realize he'd gone that long without speaking, but he basically was talking about the fan base saying, mm-hmm. you got to have faith. This is your team. You've probably had this team since you were 10, 11, 12, so you've had the faith. Do you see hope, and do you see leadership? Those are dangerous questions to ask a Jets fan base.
Yeah, you see some hope. I mean, but again, it's just going to take time because they're so starved for talent. I mean, here was a team last year that had one Pro Bowl player, and you know he was older than John Madden, and that was Frank Gore. I mean, he was the only Pro Bowler on that 53-man roster last year. And so it's like they've got to build things up. I think they are getting good leadership from Joe Douglas, and they're getting good leadership on the field from Robert Saleh. Douglas has come in. He's had two very good drafts. I think he had his best offseason as far as acquisitions because, you know, he gets Corey Davis, and he goes ahead and gets a couple pass rushers. And so I thought he did a good job there. So they're making the turn, but, again, it's such a big curve that you're trying to make the curve on. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I really know that you don't hear a whole lot about Robert Saleh, but one of the things I remember when he was in San Francisco that he had coaches that were in charge mm-hmm. of stopping him from running out on the field. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'd like a job like that.
I mean, I don't know. You might not want to get in his way. He looked pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I wonder if he can do the same thing there that Ron Rivera did with the Washington football team, you know, and I feel like it just needs, you just need one guy sometimes. And, you know, and I think Snyder in Washington has been humbled quite a bit, and that's been part of it. But you think Robert Saleh has that kind of firepower, John, like a Ron Rivera? We'll see, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see. But I think he was, because I think he was one of the best hires this offseason because, you know, he comes in, he's got good energy, players are going to like playing for him. I think that's going to be an asset in being able to get more free agents because I think they'll like to come there. You know, he's putting in a base 4-3 defense, pretty much like Seattle and like he had in San Francisco. So you like all those little things. And, you know, but again, that's it just has to take some time. You know, we'll see how it goes with the quarterback front with Zach Wilson, how he does. I mean, he seems to be getting good reviews so far. You know, they still have big problems at the cornerback position because they really didn't do much to fix cornerback. But, you know, and their offensive line still, I think, not too good.
John, I'm seeing.
Other than that, they're okay.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Prime to win.
Sorry. It seemed like a long list, John, but you're probably right.
I'm curious how you think this attitude will play. Now the COVID, you know, vaccination situation in all the sports is a very polarizing topic. I get it. And I'm reading a story about, you know, Ron Rivera brought in a vaccination expert to speak to the team and, you know, answer their questions and sort of debunk anything, any misinformation, whatever. Just educate people. And I think that's fair. I think it's fine mm-hmm. if people have questions. So Bruce Arians was asked, hey, will you bring in a specialist to do the same thing. And he says, quote, I'm the specialist. If you want to get back to normal, get vaccinated. 85% is what we're shooting for. It's still a personal choice, but I don't see a reason not to be vaccinated. Now, listen, I get what he's saying, but at the same time, I think you have to understand the room, and then not everybody is of the same mind, and it would probably benefit him to bring in somebody with the credentials that, that could answer the questions that some of his players may have. What do you think of that approach of, I'm the specialist?
I think he's okay with that one, even though, again, it's always I with him. It's one thing with Bruce Arians.
It's all about him.
Yeah, it's always like... you should be Bruce Arians, or with an I in the front. But again, I mean, he's a bright coach and he does such a great job. But what more information do you need? If you don't get vaccinated, you do have a chance of catching COVID-19. Then, of course, what you also look at is what came out today with all the protocols with the NFL and the NFLPA. Because now, I mean, you know, if you, and of course, everybody, at least internally, is going to know who doesn't have the vaccine, because again, you know, you have to wear a mask. You can't eat in any, you can't eat in the dinner table or the lunch table with any of your teammates who are vaccinated. You're pretty much located in a different part of the plane, in a different part of the hotel.
Are they even on the plane together? I thought they weren't allowed on the charter.
Yeah, we saw something about that being the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's
they'd have to take a completely separate flight.
They'd have to fly separately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're punishing anybody, but it's making it difficult.
But you also saw that if, let's say, for example, there's a mandatory, I think, $14,000 fine if you're not vaccinated and you get COVID-19, and that fine could be up to $50,000.
Wait, say the players?
The players.
So a non-vaccinated player who catches the virus will be fined?
Yes. Minimum 14, and I think his max is 50.
What if he's asymptomatic, like a lot of young people, that they're just for testing, they're gonna find him?
Yeah. That's why I think it's the difference between 14 and 50. And because, again, it's like if he's just asymptomatic, it may be the low part of it, but if he's really sick, it's going to be the high part of it. And so, you know, why would you gamble? Because, you know, you could risk being cut. You can risk doing all these different things by not getting vaccinated. Right. And so to my way of thinking is just get vaccinated, because there's too many things now, what they added in today's protocol, that can go wrong and really put you in a tough position.
Yeah, that I think those kinds of things turn people away even more, could possibly. I wonder about that. But, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Remember, you also have to get tested every day.
Yeah.
Every day if you don't have the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. And then they have, I think, the same threshold, which is 85% as Major League Baseball, I believe. And then I guess then the team doesn't get punished for, or no, you know, doesn't have the strict protocols after that.
Right. So, yeah.
All right, John. Well, what do you expect as far as Marquise Blair? And you know, are we assuming, I kind of am, that he's going to step right back in and he's going to be the nickel corner? And I know he went through the, you know, the knee situation, but did they see enough in him last year in camp and then in that first couple of games to make him the front runner?
Yeah, he or Ugo Amadi, I would imagine. You know, Trey Brown may be in the mix too, but you know, he may be more on the outside, which right now I think is going to be Witherspoon and it's going to be DJ Reed. But everything I've heard and some of the things that I've seen, he's looking good. I mean, he's really, you know, came back off the injury very well. He's in great shape. He's moving well. So he does have a great shot to be the nickel cornerback.
710-710 is the text line for those of you that have questions for John. We'll get to some of those here in just a moment. By the way, somebody saw it and the screen just refreshed on me, but they were asking about Shaquem Griffin. Does he have any interest out there right now that you're aware of?
Where did he go? Not Denver. He made a visit to San Francisco?
I don't know. I'm asking you, John.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to remember because he just went someplace yesterday and had a visit. So it may have been Arizona. So it's like, you know, so he's being looked at. There's no question. I mean, I'm just amazed that the great Urban Meyer hasn't done anything, because don't you think it was such a natural? Here you get Shaquem Griffin. You give him 3 years, $40 million. And then you come back and then, you know, he'd love to be reunited with his twin brother. Right. And, you know, particularly being in the area near where they grew up together. So it's like, to me, it would have been a perfect fit. And he can help him out on special teams, probably more so than Tim Tebow.
John Harbaugh, he was saying Lamar Jackson's going to get paid, and he knows that was the headline. I'm sure the GM there, John, who I'm not quite sure who it is.
Eric DaCosta.
That's right. I was going to say Ozzie Newsome, but that was a while ago. But, yeah, the GM there, DaCosta's probably saying, shut up, John.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep saying that? How much what are you looking at for Lamar Jackson, do you think?
You've got to think it's going to be in excess of 35. You know, he did win an MVP. I mean, I know he doesn't throw the ball great, but he keeps his team winning, and they're going to rely on him even more this year. They are going to, you know, continue to run the ball, but they're going to have him more take snaps behind center as opposed to just everything in shotgun and pistol.
Yeah, so I heard that too.
Yeah, so it's so a little bit of a different one, but I'd have to think that, you know, I don't think he can get the $40 million. I mean, you can make the argument, it's like, hey, I've won one more MVP than Dak Prescott, and he got the $40 million, but he'll get paid.
I'll tell you what, the thing that impresses me is his interception totals are really low.
Yeah.
He's not thrown double-digit, and his completion percentage is pretty good. So not just a runner, but, man, mm-hmm. when you look at his numbers, you go, well, yeah, that's pretty good. But then, you know, you look at the yardage as far as carries go. My gosh.
Yeah, but also look at the yardage passing-wise because, I mean, look at his passing yardage last year. It was under 3,000.
Yeah.
You would think it would start to balance out is eventually, like all players like that, he'll lose a step. He won't be quite as shifty. Maybe he suffers an injury, and you got to be able to rely on a guy who can be less mobile and still pass you to victory.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the
question for me about him.
Yeah, but you know, but you can see he's made some progress. I think he took a little bit of a step back last year, but I know from year one to year two, I mean, he really improved himself as much as any quarterback we've seen in a while because, you know, he was not a good pocket passer as a rookie, which is understandable. He was, you know, didn't have much pocket passing in college, but then he became a pretty good pocket passer in year two. Now, the only thing that he wasn't able to do was, you know, in the pocket, get the ball down deep in the middle of the field. That was still an issue, and he didn't improve that last year, but sounds like he's working on some things and trying to get better.
Cam Newton just gets cooler and cooler to me. You know, he was asked about, you know, the drafting of Mac Jones, and he goes, yeah, I thought it was appropriate. I thought that's what they should have done. You know, and he just seems to be able to get along with Bill Belichick. And, I mean, I don't know. I never thought he was, like, a problem or anything. I just thought that he was kind of a good time Charlie, right?
Yeah,
when everything was okay, then he was great. And then, you know, once he went in the tank, I don't know, he just seems like he's gotten better as far as a leader goes, John.
I still remember how many times we've gone into the locker room and you know, all you see is him not talking to anybody, him having the headsets on, listening to music, then going to take the shower, coming back, put the headsets on, listen to music, not really communicating with anybody even after a game.
Hmm. Yeah, but I mean, that was a couple years ago. I don't know. Maybe he's changed.
Yeah.
Hey,
but also, I do remember this. I mean, he took the criticism unfairly coming out of college that he wasn't a good leader and didn't work hard. And that was so wrong because, I mean, the players in college liked him. I mean, he did work hard and, you know, it was just a bad report. So, yeah, there is some leadership in him.
Hey, John, did you see the story about Vince Wilfork's son?
Yeah, I didn't see the full story, but he did some bad things, for sure.
Yeah, for those that haven't seen this, and I just saw it a few minutes ago, the son of former NFL defensive lineman Vince Wilfork was arrested last month and charged with stealing more than $300,000 of his father's jewelry, including two Patriots Super Bowl championship rings.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
brutal, man.
That really is.
23-year-old kid who stole all that from his dad and sold it. I hadn't heard much about his family situation. I don't know what his son's going through. It doesn't say anything about, you know, hey, he's been in trouble or he's got, you know, substance abuse. So I don't really know what's behind this. Have you heard much about his family situation? And
Probably too early because, you know, because like in a lot of cases, you don't even hear anything about the siblings and how they are in the family. I mean, all you know is Vince was a real big guy and a really good player and had all that success with New England. And now to have this happen, it's got to be devastating. It's like the same thing like for Andy Reid and what happened with his son in the car accident. I mean, it's like, man, it's terrible.
Yeah, you certainly don't expect that from your own kids.
No, no. Not
taking your stuff and selling it? Yeah, that's bad.
Dante Hightower, he's going to be back. Mr. What do they call him? Mr. Playoff? Mr. February? Mr. He's the one that makes all the plays. And, you know, he had the tackle, shoestring tackle of Marshawn Lynch before the interception happened. But he opted out last year. Is that right, John?
That's correct, yeah.
And did he have some underlying, you know, health concerns, or he just decided he was just
He was one of eight Patriots decided to opt out. And, you know, Bill Belichick didn't have a problem with it because, again, I think Bill realized, you know, with Tom Brady gone and them kind of going through a rebuilding process. And I think he also didn't mind having that money saved, you know, because, again, they didn't have to pay him. They had to pay him $150,000, but it didn't count against the cap. And so now it's a matter that it's like, okay, where do we go? But Dante comes back and he's much needed and it's going to be a big help for that team.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, coming up, it was a great night for the Sonics of old. Tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up at the top of the hour, Bob Glauber from New York Newsday. Award winner Bob Glauber will join us.
He loves you.
Go way back. He likes to bust my onions. He likes to... You know, I'll give him this big, grand introduction like I do with Paul Moyer, and he would always follow it up with, "Shut up, Bob." one of the great guys out there, and he's the national NFL guy who just received a big award from. We were looking at it the other day, Lefko. Who was it that gave him the award?
Pro Football Writers Association.
Yeah.
Isn't Clayton part of that?
I'm assuming he is. Yeah. Yeah, so Bob won the award, and we'll congratulate him on that, and he'll probably tell me to shut up. So look forward to that. Meanwhile, I asked you guys this question on our email last night, and it's more for the listeners out there. 710-710, you can text in your answer to the Mac and Jack's text line. You still root for former Sonics? There's only two left in the league, and one who's a superstar in Kevin Durant. Now, Durant's image has taken a hit over the years for a couple of reasons. A, there are a lot of people that jump on him for going from team to team, you know, chasing titles, if you will, going to a team who's just loaded and ready to win and not building from the ground up, so to speak. So he takes hits for that. And he's gotten surly with the media over, you know, more recent years. You know, people feel like he's soft or he's being a baby or whatever. I will always root for Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is still, to this day, a vocal, vocal supporter of the NBA being back in Seattle. He's been seen wearing Sonics gear over and over throughout the years. When he came out here for that exhibition game that sold out in minutes at Key Arena before it was torn down, he came out on the court in a Sean Kemp jersey, and he's, you know, taking the mic to center court and just talking about the NBA and Seattle and what it means. And just so he's had Seattle's back since the day he left here. So I will always go Nets, go whichever team he's playing for until Seattle has a team. Are people still on board with him, or have people lost a taste for him, I guess, if you will? Because it feels like just nationally he's taken some hits. I'm just wondering if the local Sonic fans that are still, you know, saying I like the NBA and I would embrace it, if you still are a Durant fan.
Yeah, texted in to Mac and Jack 710-710 about that, Lefko. Yeah, I ran the show for a little while, and then I think I'm a hot shot. 710-710, how do you feel? I mean,
Lefko's cracking up at you there.
All of those things that you said make me like him. Was he the guy that just had the bodyguard out on the court?
Yeah. And I can't blame him for that. I don't know if his bodyguard was overzealous. I don't think KD looked to the stands and said, hey, whatever his name is, John, get down here and handle this guy. I think the guy just jumped into action, which was really weird.
You know, the one thing I remember about him is he was down on the field before a game, and we were down there. I think it was 2007, I believe. Yeah, 2007 season, and I was down there, and I looked at that dude, and he's obviously very tall. He had the narrowest shoulders I have ever seen.
Yeah,
for a man that big, but
I think he's 6'9". Is he listed at 6'9"?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was always looking at football players, pro football players my whole life. And when I was playing up here in Seattle, I remember seeing Dominique Wilkins.
Yeah, at the human highlight reel.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, my gosh, that dude is skinny. But, yeah, I mean,
Not anymore.
not running up and down the court every night 82 yeah. times is probably, you know, you got to go on a diet after that. But, yeah, Kevin Durant, I think the things that he's saying and being a supporter – people are definitely going to love him for that. You're right about the bodyguard thing. I mean, it might have been like he might have talked to him after, like, don't ever do that, man. I mean,
I think the guy's not allowed in the arena now or any other games or something along those lines. Man. I'd never heard of
or any
like
basketball game ever anywhere. He's only 32. It just seems like he's been in the league for forever.
Yeah. Well, I love him as a player. He's a brilliant player. He's one of the great players in the game. And again, just the way he supported the Sonics, even when they went to Oklahoma City, he was still very vocal about his support for Seattle and NBA and the Sonics and everything attached to it, and has maintained that, whether it's just wearing the gear here and there or speaking out on it when he's asked about it. He doesn't hide behind any of it. He's not trying to be, you know, protect the shield like they say in the NFL. He's not trying to make it sound like, hey, I understand what the NBA is doing. It's all good. No, he's spoken out, and I appreciate that. And as a hardcore Sonics fan, I'm in his corner. I will root for him until the day he retires, unless he really does something untoward off the court.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of positive responses on the Mac and Jack 710 hotline.
Text line,
whatever you want to call it. Kevin Durant forever. KD is KD the man. Yeah, they were going on and on about him. So, yeah, I'd love to see him. Maybe he'll get, after his career, you know, he can be part of a group that brings the NBA back to Seattle.
And he had a massive night when they needed him to, because, you know, you got superstars that are hurt, that aren't playing. Sorry, Frank's looking at people walking by the glass door.
It's Kyle Brown. He's too tall.
Come here, Frank. Come
here. He's too tall.
But he goes 49 points, 17 rebounds, and 10 assists, and played every single minute of the game last night. And Jeff Green, another former Sonic, 27 points. Obviously, he doesn't have the stature or the name value, but former Sonic. And listen, those are guys I'll root for, man. I never held it against the players. I always was sort of torn when the Thunder came into existence and everybody's like, oh, I hate them. I hope they lose every game. I'm like, I'm kind of torn because, of course, I am not a fan of the ownership. I'm not a fan of how that whole thing went down. But the players didn't have anything to do with it. So I was still rooting for Kevin Durant. I was still rooting for anybody that was attached to the Sonics. It was just the ownership and everything around it. I rooted for the franchise to really struggle. But I wanted them to play well. I rooted for that. It was a weird conflict.
Yeah, well, I mean, the players didn't have much to do with it. Remember when
nothing. Nick Collison, he was there. I mean, I rooted for all those guys.
Remember when Baring was going to pull the Seahawks out of Seattle and take them to L.A.? And I remember there was like all these talk show. Dave Craig and I were down in Phoenix at that time. And I remember we called into some show where they had like a, you know, everybody was all fired up. And, you know, Dave and I said a couple of things about, you know, Baring should go back to L.A., just leave the team behind and stuff like that. And everybody was all fired up. But, I mean, yeah, that can you imagine if the Seahawks, if somebody came and took the Seahawks out of this town, I mean, it would just be ridiculous. The attendance here, was it top five? I want to say that for as far as NBA attendance.
The attendance wasn't great. I mean, they tore the franchise apart in the, you know, like the final couple seasons. They were a bad team, and the attendance wasn't great. But
the last few years.
Yeah, and they did it on purpose. I mean, they were putting a poor product on the floor.
Who was the tall redheaded dude?
Who's Swift?
Yes.
Robert Swift. Yeah.
I remember seeing that guy sitting on the sideline just going, man, that guy is huge.
He was one of their mistakes trying to find that elusive center. You know, Johan Petro was another guy. Sané was another guy. I mean, they spent pick after pick trying to find that center, and they just couldn't do it. But, yeah, Robert Swift, who later became like a walking billboard, like just tattoos from fingertip to neck. He'd been
homeschooled.
He looked like Opie Taylor. He looked like when he came into the league, this pure all-American kid. And then you see him years later, long hair, tattoos everywhere. It was just quite a transformation for him. But I'm still pulling for Durant. I hope the Nets win. Whatever team he's on, I'll root for until Seattle gets a team. Coming up, more fallout from baseball's pitching scandal. We'll hear about that next when we sweep the dial with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
We talked about this with Ryan Roland Smith at Tyler Glasnow's comments that he got hurt basically because MLB changed the rules and he tried to go cold turkey and not use any substances after having used them essentially his whole career.
But I just threw 80-something, 70-whatever innings, and then you just told me I can't use anything in the middle of the year. I had to change everything I've been doing the entire season, everything out of the window. I have to start doing something completely new. And then I'm telling you, I truly believe that's why I got hurt. Me throwing 100 and being 6'7" is why I got hurt, but that contributed. And so I'm just frustrated that, like, they don't understand how hard it is to pitch one, but to tell us to do something completely different in the middle of a season is insane. I just don't, it's ridiculous. There has to be some give and take here. You can't just take away everything and not add something. Pitchers need to be able to have some sort of control or some sort of grip on the ball.
It's funny. He's making a case like, yeah, you can kind of understand it, but he comes off as whining about not being able to continue to cheat.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying there.
He throws in, well, I'm 6'7", I throw 100. Sure, that contributed. It's like you're throwing 100. The torque on the arm, we've talked about the motion of pitching. And anybody who's seen a picture of a pitcher in motion, like in mid-throw and just their elbow looks completely deformed. You see the tremendous amount of stress put on there. So the idea that, that might have contributed, but it's more about what I used to have on my fingers. Mm-hmm. And Tom Wilhelmsen, who used to be part of the bullpen out here, tweeted this out. Somebody sent this to me on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter, at Wyman and Bob, at Bob Stelton on Twitter. Tom Wilhelmsen, less than a day ago, are pitchers really saying they are getting hurt because they can't use illegal substances anymore? Cry me a river, you big baby. Pretty good example you are. That's from a pitcher, former Mariner pitcher, Tom Wilhelmsen.
Yeah, I remember Tom. He's a good dude. Was it with Ryan Roland Smith where we had the conversation, Mike, where we were saying, how are they going to handle this? Like, are they going to come out to the mound and right there, you know, grab the guy's hat and then eject him from the game? I mean, is it going to be a big dramatic thing, or are they going to wait till he goes into the dugout and all of a sudden he disappears and you got somebody warming up in the bullpen? I'm curious how it's going to be regulated.
I don't know if they, because it's got to be uniform. You can't have one umpiring crew that does it this way. Hey, we're going to look at every other ball that's thrown out. We're going to check every third ball. Like, hey, hold on, catch. Let me see that.
Yeah.
Or walk. Are you going to pay a visit to the mound once a game and do it? I mean, they've got to have a uniform policy that applies to every umpiring crew.
Well, and what about the cameras that they have in every, you know, I remember Jerry DePoto telling us that, you know, we got, what, 6 or 7 that Root Sports has, but then I want to say MLB has like another 5 or 6 or something. So wouldn't you just, you know, I wonder if back at the MLB Central, if they're sitting there with a camera on the pitcher watching his every move, is he going to the belt?
And some of these guys aren't, you know, some of them are just adjusting their cap or, you know, messing with the sleeve on their jersey. There's nothing untoward going on there. Some of them are adjusting. It's part of their tick, if you will. You see hitters go through an entire array of those things. Unstrap the gloves, kick the cleats, you know, stick one foot in the box, look for a minute, stick the other foot in the box. I mean,
what if you put sunscreen on and then you start to sweat and then you wipe it off of your forehead? Is that okay?
How they implement it is going to be really, really interesting.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, that might be part of the reason where, you know, pitchers supporting other pitchers. Tom Glavine, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. He's come out as well and said, you know, every pitcher has used something, and he's kind of confused by this new enforcement.
Everybody has experimented with something to get a better grip on the baseball, right? And I know for me, it was always, when it was cold, I had a really hard time holding on to the baseball. It felt like you were throwing a snowball. The ball was slick. It was hard to feel it coming off your fingers, so it was really hard to create any spin, whether that was on a fastball or a breaking ball. And the same can be true sometimes in the summer, particularly down here in Atlanta. When it gets really hot and really humid and you're sweating a lot and your hands are wet, it's hard to keep a grip on the baseball. So I think that's where these guys are concerned, and rightly so, right? They they feel like they don't have the same control of the baseball. Therefore, they can't make it do what they want it to do, which is obviously one byproduct.
Yeah, the whole problem with this, in my opinion, Dave, is that it's been accepted for decades. I mean, that's Tom Glavine, who pitched decades ago. You know, he was a stud in the 90s. He was talking about using stuff. It didn't start in the 90s. It started decades and decades of this in baseball, and it was acknowledged that it was going on. It wasn't openly, like, trying to flaunt it and shove it in people's face, but it was accepted that that's just something that happens. It's like stealing signs from second. It's like these different levels of cheating, breaking the rules, that was sort of just like a wink and a nod. It's going on. And now baseball has seen it really impact the offense this year and heard the outcry from people saying, man, this is terrible to watch. It's boring and nobody can hit anymore. And it's a massive over rotation, in my opinion.
Well, you mean enforcing it this strictly?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better
to do it. I agree that the timing is abrupt. Like, all right, now we got to, when they've known it's been going on. Trevor Bauer was right. They've sort of, you know, they're complicit, Dave.
Okay.
They knew it was going on.
They knew
it was going on.
Right.
Didn't say anything about it. But because it's been so extreme this year and the way the offenses have really taken a hit and can't hit, that they've said, okay, June 21st, that's it, no more.
But it's a lot better than moving the mound back. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, all the things that were going to go on. And I think that's where both you and I settled. It's like the first thing that you can do is just take away the substances, make sure there's none of that.
Yeah.
Then we'll see what happens. Then you can start talking about moving the mound back.
Sweeping the dial.
So unintentionally, and this comes off very funny, Derek Carr was trying to give an earnest answer. He was asked about, you know, the quarterbacks leaving and wanting to move on to other teams. And he came out and said he's very loyal to the Raiders, but it comes off sounding a little different.
I've said it over and over again. I probably quit football if I had to play for somebody else. You know, I am a Raider for my entire life. I'm going to root for one team for the rest of my life, and it's the Raiders. I think we can all agree that if we were able to pull it off and win a championship here, that would feel much better than just piling a whole bunch of great players together and figuring, joining up and doing it that way. I'd rather go down with the ship, you know what I'm saying, if I have to. When I sign a contract, I completely... in my mind, have to fulfill that.
Kind of torn.
Part of me is like, if I'm a Raider fan, I love that.
Exactly.
I love hearing a guy that says, I am a Raider. And in fact, if I were to have to play anywhere else, I'd just retire. I mean, as a fan, don't you love that level of loyalty?
Love it. Yeah, I mean, he's going to go down as one of the great Raiders, especially that group, that fan base. You know, they're very...
A bunch of maniacs.
Yeah, very much, which in a good way. You know, I didn't like the fans down there. He is such a interesting topic. It just because his numbers are pretty good. He doesn't win. It doesn't seem like John Gruden. I think the most
are they losing because of him though?
Yeah,
is that why they're not winning? I don't quite get it from a distance.
The one thing that I think is ridiculous is this perceived rift between him and John Gruden because John Gruden swears too much. I don't think that is
I don't buy that at all.
He's been in football his whole life.
The whole locker room swears.
Yeah.
Everywhere. You're not going to get away from that by going to another team. Like, this is the team that doesn't swear. That doesn't exist. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So the idea that that's his problem, I don't buy. I don't think he's maybe he doesn't swear and doesn't love it, but that's not driving a wedge between him and anybody. Nonsense.
Maybe we didn't swear in 1992.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't.
We were 2-14.
I think there was a lot more swearing that
season. If there's no swearing, you're 0-16.
Jeez. 425. BS, Stelton, by your rationale, let them use steroids again. What are you talking about? I didn't say let them use anything. I didn't say let them cheat. I said this has been accepted in baseball for decades. I wasn't saying don't take it away from them. I'm not sure what you heard, but if we're going to debate, please.
Sometimes.
Please get facts straight. That's all.
Sometimes people hear what they want to hear.
Yeah. I just, okay.
I've sent that text probably more than any other. It's like, I don't think you were listening.
Yeah. They'll argue a point that was not trying to be made. But all right. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, the award-winning writer that is Bob Glauber will join us next year to talk some NFL with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.